Hello, and welcome to the Cape Coffee Beans podcast. My name is Faden, and I'm the founder of Cape Coffee Beans, South Africa's leading retailer in the specialty coffee space. We sell everything you need to make an amazing cup of coffee at home, at the office, in the cafe, or even on the road, including equipment, accessories, and artisan roasted coffee beans, both online and in-store at our headquarters in Claremont, Cape Town. This podcast is a deep dive into the world of South African specialty coffee, with a focus on the brands, the businesses, and the people in the local coffee scene, many of whom I'm privileged to work with. I'll be bringing you interviews with many of these South African coffee heroes, so please do subscribe to the podcast and share it with your coffee-loving friends. Thank you for your support. Now let's get to today's episode. In this episode, I interviewed Richard van Tonder, part of the founding team of Legado Coffee Roasters. And it was a really interesting conversation. As much as I thought I knew their story, we got into a little bit more detail. And if nothing else, I think that this is a very interesting and entertaining story of how these guys got into the business, how they started roasting coffee, and where they found their coffee roasting experience, as well as their coffee roaster. So I'm sure that you'll enjoy that. I think another one of the intriguing themes that's emerging, as I've now done a few of these and spoken to a few people in Cape Town Coffee, is how a lot of these stories are interlinked. If you haven't listened to the episode with Warren Mechanic of Coffee yet, you might enjoy listening to that one first before you listen to this one, or just after it. But it is interesting to hear how the origins of many of these coffee businesses overlap. I really enjoyed this conversation with Richard. I really love Legado's coffee, so I'd encourage you to try it. I hope you enjoy this episode. Now let's get to the conversation with Richard. Richard, welcome to the Cape Coffee Beans podcast.
Thanks, Faden. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So for those that are listening, Richard, you are one of the founders and the current owner and manager of Legado Coffee Roasting based in Stellenbosch. We've known each other and worked together for quite some time, so I'm looking forward to sharing some of your story and maybe learning a bit more about it myself over the next little bit. So great. I always like to start, before we get into all the coffee stuff, with asking the people that I've interviewed on this podcast what they were doing before coffee. And if I remember correctly, you were in the UK, is that right? Before you started your coffee career?
Yes, that's correct. So so Andrew is also one of the business partners. We actually studied together at Stellenbosch University, and after that, we actually, like in those days, mid early 2000s, we everyone still went over to the UK, probably just to pay off their student loans. We actually, before we actually left for the UK, we had chats and said, "Listen, it would be cool to have." To do something in maybe even in the coffee industry. And we liked coffee, but we were by no stretch of the imagination enthusiasts. So so it's, you know, the odd cup here and there. And I think early 2000s, there weren't a lot of options, especially in Stellenbosch, for us to explore. So, and I don't think we ever knew the coffee industry would change into what it changed into in that stage. So so we actually went over. Andrew came a while after I was already based in the UK. He came over, and we started looking at just toying with the idea a little bit more. I think what drew us to the coffee industry was probably more the social element more than coffee itself at that stage, just purely because at that stage coffee tasted like coffee, and I'm probably speaking for a majority of the consumers out there, is that a lot of them don't know the difference between a good cup and just the average cup and a bad cup. So at that stage coffee was coffee to us. So for us it was more about the social element. We saw coffee as a means where people either meet and get together, especially more when we were based in the UK. I think the coffee culture there were and probably still is different to what we have here. It's almost a necessity for people on their way to work. I think a big part of your population that does public transport has the option of just popping in and grabbing a cup. And also it's part of their daily fix, and it's affordable for them. You know, for a lot of the first world countries, it's an affordable product. To fork out £2 or £3, maybe £5 a day, a few times a day, would not make such a big difference. So at that stage, like I said, it was more the social side. So we were intrigued more by probably by a form of setting up shop, maybe multiple shops, and just having that space where people can come together.
What were you actually doing in the UK while all of this was brewing in the background?
So when I studied at varsity, I studied business, a bit more focused towards marketing. Went over to the UK and actually started working for one of the largest food distributors in the UK. And I ended up predominantly within central London, and working a lot with bigger TAL groups and big chains, and a lot of the fine dining restaurants as well, with the executive chefs. And I was intrigued. I mean, we also had, for instance, Cafe Nero at that stage were one of the coffee chains that we serviced and distributed product for.
Okay.
So that was just getting a bit of a taste of the food industry. And it started intriguing us a little bit more. So we also had a friend that worked for a company called Capricorn, that is, I think, the holding company of Nando's UK. And he was good friends with the owner, founder as well, of that Nando's UK. We actually started thinking about doing stuff with him regarding coffee, and maybe opening a few stores there. And then in 2006, I came back for my brother's wedding, and then I stumbled across Lucien at Lawrenceford, at Coffee Roasting Company. And he was roasting on that little Digich roaster. We had a very good chat. I was very intrigued at that stage, just on his approach of doing business. And then also stumbled across Origin and Vida and them started up as well. So I was looking at the coffee culture and realizing that there's a little bit of an awakening in South Africa around that. So Andrew and myself, actually, we just started doing a lot of research. We tried to, when we were in the UK, try to get as much information, feedback, numbers around what owning a coffee shop and maybe even a chain entails. What type of numbers are you looking at? What type of investment are you looking at? And again, at that stage, we were still more focused on the social side of coffee more than the product itself. Although we loved, and as mentioned, loved and enjoyed drinking coffee. And then, due to circumstances, I came back 2007 and looked around trying to get into the food industry. Yeah, Andrew also came back a little bit earlier, Andrew was in the finance side. I was looking to get into the food industry on this side. And then by chance, random chain of events, I actually got into the oil industry. So not cooking oil, car oil, vehicle oil, crude oil. So I ended up working for a company called Castrol. And I ended up working there for probably about 4 to 5 years. And around 2009, I said to Andrew, listen, if we want to take this coffee thing to some sort of level or actually make it happen, we've probably got to, you know, start digging into it, and all the research that we've done, we've probably got to start applying and probably look at registering some sort of a company, just to get things started. Just to, otherwise it's just going to be parked there and be a pipe dream. So 2009, we actually looked around and decided we're going to buy an espresso machine and a grinder. At that stage, again, knew absolutely nothing about machines or actually coffee itself, and just decided to take the plunge and bought a really awful, terrible one-group coffee machine for quite dead cheap. And we installed it at Andrew's folks' house in Ronnebosch, and we played around with it, having no idea what we're doing. I just want to bring it back, you know, and I'll probably come back to this point a little bit later. But in 2008, 2009, even 2010, you could find very, very limited information about coffee. You know, even if it's, you know, how to make a good cup of coffee, your channels were YouTube and that's pretty much it, or Google, you know, so you could find absolutely nothing. And the guys that did show you, you know, it was kind of debatable whether it's, you know, it's any good or not. So that's kind of what we lend ourselves to. And we made awful cups of coffee at that point. We bought
I'm curious. I'm curious what the machine was.
It was a Grimac.
Grimac, okay.
So yeah, by the take of it, you probably haven't heard of it. I actually, when I was in Milan last year at Host Expo, I actually saw them there, and I took a photo for Andrew just to share it with him, just back to the days. But I was surprised that they are actually still in existence. Anyway, there are guys, I think there are agents in South Africa for Grimac, so I don't want to diss anyone.
Hopefully at that they're not point, listening.
Yes, well, hopefully not. I mean, it's for me, it's a kind of an entry-level machine, having worked on the high-end stuff. So, but again, it was, like I said, it was very cheap. Bought it off a lady that was kind of liquidating her business, and she bought it somewhere else, and it was, you know, a hand-me-down pretty much. So, we made, like I said, we made awful cups of coffee. And from there, we actually started the process of looking for a name. So, I think like any business owner, some business owner will say, listen, I had an idea and I had this name for years. For us, it wasn't as simple. We took about 6 months to come up with a name, and it was through trial and error and just dotting down a business plan and just what we wanted to do and what we wanted to stand for. So, and then we had probably about 20 names, and what we would do is we would send it out to all our friends and have them list it from 1 to 20, or their top 10. And then they would come back, and then we'd do it again. So until we came up with the top three, and then we decided on the top three, which one suited us actually the best. And that's why we came up with the Legado. That pretty much just means legacy. And for us, that's pretty much what it is. For us, it's about, you know, a lasting legacy of quality and equality straight through the supply chain and the chain that we deal with. And I can honestly say that in some areas of the supply chain, we've made a success of it. In some areas, we haven't. In some areas, we are still hoping to make a success and a change and probably have an effect on that supply chain. But yeah, so then we registered the company, and Andrew and myself, we were doing this part-time. So then the next process started, where we were visiting and looking, having a closer look. We both stayed in town. I stayed in Seapoint and he stayed in Tambuurskloof. So we obviously had more exposure to the coffee culture in the city. That was definitely, I think, the better place to be. So by that time, it was Origin and Truth and Deluxe started off a year before us as well. So got a bit of exposure to that. And then we kind of reassessed what we wanted to do. So for us, it was, and that probably came out within the business plan as well, it was to try and own as much of that chain as possible so that we can have an impact and an effect on every part of that chain as far as possible. So, you know, not leaving our roasting over to be done by someone else that maybe has a, pushes your roasting into a Friday afternoon shift just before clocking off, you know. So a typical drum a typical washing machine roast of chucking it in and later on just dumping the roast. So for us, it was, you know, trying to control and having an impact on each part of that chain. So that then led us to starting to look for a roaster. There were a bunch of roasters, I wouldn't say a bunch of roasters available, but there were some roasters in the industry that we had a look at, but we weren't 100% convinced. So then again, we chatted to Lucien, and he was very happy with his Diederich. So we did a bit of research around the Diederich, and we loved what the feedback was and the build quality. And just starting to understand at that stage a little bit more about airflow and heat. So then we started to look around for it. So at that stage, trying to find a Diederich in South Africa was possibly non-existent and was you had a 1 in a million chance. So randomly, I was looking for a roaster probably again another 6 months. And then one day I came across a website where it was a guy that had a little roastery cafe in Plet, and he was roasting on a Diederich, and I just decided to give him a call. It said something that if you're interested in Diederich roasters, then you must contact him. So yes, I thought, whoa, this is it. Here's our big chance. Now we can finally get hold of a Diederich roaster, even if it was new. So contacted him, and he said to us, listen, he's coming down for the Cape Argus. We can meet up with him. And that was probably about 6 weeks later. He came down. This was now early 2010. Came down for the August, and we met up with him. And I still remember it was quite a big day for Andrew and myself, because we met up with him at a Vida. I remember, I think it was the one that opened up in Canal Walk. And we met up with him and we started chatting, and he said to us, listen, he's South African, his wife's Canadian. He worked in the industry, coffee industry, for 2 years in the States and then for almost 10 years in Canada. And he came to South Africa to spend some time with family, but also to have a little bit more of a relaxed life. And he ended up working 7 days a week. So he's kind of over it. And they planning on going back to Canada. So would we maybe be interested in buying his equipment? And then he'll do some training. And at that point, he ripped out a training manual that he's put together over the previous decade that he's been working. And he was one of those guys that loved a bit of research and documentation. So he ripped it out, and it was like a Bible. There was like a halo around it as he ripped it out. We heard the angels sing. And it was literally, it was thick, a thick file. And we started just going through that. And it had everything from the history to the intricate details of roasting, the molecular changes, the scientific changes happening to coffee, the water quality, how to test for it, you know, from brewing espresso straight through the bank. It was, I can't even remember how many pages, but it was thick. And Andrew and myself just literally looked at each other. And I think both of us knew at that point that it doesn't matter by hook or by crook, we've got to come up with the finances to buy all of this, because he's literally handing down 10 years of experience in a manual. And this would probably take us 5 to 10 years to gain this knowledge. He can hand over for us to us in a period of 2 weeks, and then we can build on that. So we actually took him up on the deal, bought all his equipment, his GB5, his grinders, his roaster, had a chip from Plett. And then we decided initially in the business plan that for us to set up in Stellenbosch would be a wiser decision. Two reasons. Cape Town was, there were quite a few guys there already. Like I mentioned, it was Deluxe, Truth, Origin, Espresso Lab started up. So we just felt in that area it wasn't saturated, but it was just everyone's pretty close to each other, and having another one there is not going to distinguish us necessarily. So that was the first reason. The second reason, one of our other business partners, at that stage, he was more of a silent business partner. They have a farm in Stellenbosch, and he said, listen, they've got a winery or wine cellar that's basically just standing empty. I say empty, but it's full of farming equipment, but we can empty it, and then we can probably use that at no cost. So that's what we did. So we emptied it out, 30 years of storage in that wine cellar. Wine cellar is over 100 years old. Cleaned it out, put in a new floor, new windows, new doors, and then got ourselves ready for the shipment that came from Plett. So literally stuff arrived, and it was just the roaster, espresso machine, and the grinder standing in our facility. And a pallet full of half bags of green coffee that he gave us as well. So we did 2 weeks of quite intensive training, and then he literally waved us goodbye and got on a plane and flew back to Canada with his family. So, and that kind of left us, I would probably say August 2010, just in the deep side of the pool. So, you know, at that stage, everything is information overload, and you've got to try and figure out. So luckily we, via email at that stage, we communicated if we had questions with them. And we decided, because we all had day jobs, that, you know, we would sell to family and friends at first, but it's just to cover our costs. So we're not gonna put any markups. It's just literally just to get things going and play around and get behind the machine. And we did that. And funny enough, I think our first customer through word of mouth came from, I think it was Paternoster. There's a guest house called Abalone Guest House, and randomly someone heard about us and tasted the coffee and said, listen, they would love to buy from us. So that was quite a momentous occasion for us. You know, fulfilling a 10 kilo order, you know, you're looking at it and you're thinking, you've made it, you know. If I look back now, I'm like, yeah, pretty naive, but yeah, so that was quite a momentous occasion. And from there, you know, we kind of built, and then early, I think it was early 2011, that's kind of where I crossed paths with Warren. Lucien had just passed away, and then probably a couple of weeks later, I just got a call from, or just got an email from Warren saying, can you roast a bag of coffee for me? So Warren, if you're listening, you know, we have a special relationship, but that's Warren style. It was just a one-liner, just, can you roast this coffee? Not an introduction and hi or anything, just, can you roast this coffee? So I said to him, listen, we'll try. So we roasted a bag of coffee. He sent it out to his customers. They were happy. And he shipped all his coffee over from Coffee Roasting Company down to us. And we started contract roasting for him for, I think it was close to 6-7 months until he received both his Diederich roasters. And that was a good experience for us. I almost feel like I did my 10,000 hours in that couple of months, although it wasn't close to 10,000 hours. But Warren at that stage had quite a lot of coffees. I know he would love to have those amount of coffees again. But I think he had like 23 or 24 different coffees that we were roasting for him.
Goodness.
So, yeah, so... And I must say, I'm pretty proud of him, because at that stage, some of those coffees were absolutely horrible. And I kept on telling him, you can do better than this, you know. And now he's probably got, in my opinion, he's got some of the best coffees. I mean, the Caravella guys that he's working with as well, I mean, they're amazing with their coffees that he gets from them. So, so I'm pretty chuffed with him. That he changed his game.
Yeah, Warren, I mean, it's definitely true. Coffee in terms of like flying under the radar but having incredible coffees, yeah, definitely punch above their weights. And for those listening who are interested, the story does intersect with the story that Warren tells in episode 4 of the podcast, so you can listen to that as well and hear Warren's end of the story and how he wound up asking you guys to roast his coffee. But coming to your story, you were roasting all those coffees for him?
Yeah, so that kind of gave me an idea of how coffees are reacting. Because at that stage, I was, you know, you had a little bit more confidence when roasting. But I think after that period that we roasted for him, I was like, now I understand the process much better. Mm-hmm. Just because of the different coffees that you roast. You just start understanding how they react and what you can get out of them. And obviously, I had 23 coffees that I could constantly cup without. Warren never worried. I didn't even realize whether he was, or I don't know if he realized that we cupped his coffees. But it was just something that we could do just to kind of train your palate, because your palate is something that you build on. Constantly. Some people are born with a better palate than others, but I'm a firm believer that you train your palate. And also you've got to train your brain to recognize what you're tasting as well. So that only gets better with age. Anyway, so did that, and it was a good time for us just to build a bit of cash flow. And for me, it was literally 2 months after Warren asked us to do that, I decided to go into the coffee roasting business full time. So I resigned at Kestrel and then moved over. And that was good, because I could kind of pay myself a little bit of a salary and start this journey. And at the end of that period, we kind of build up enough finances just to do a bit more work on our brand. So we did set up a website and just build around that. which was great. So from there, we definitely had an uptake in business. And then in 2013, our journey started with exclusive books. But I don't know if that's a discussion for another day. But we had we first started off as just consulting and training and supplier of coffee for their cafes, and ended up opening 16 cafes for them before they handed the space back to Seattle. But that was more of a due to managerial, I would say, the managers not or owners not seeing eye to eye, shareholders. So we were quite bummed about that. We learned a lot through that period, and we really tried to push the envelope with those cafes. We were lucky enough that the CEO at that stage, he was pretty much the visionary on exclusive books and revamping and rebranding, in a sense, or updating their brand. He initially asked us at the beginning of our meeting, first time, he asked us if this was our business and we had to start a cafe, how would we do it and what would we do? So we kind of went all out. We did a presentation, and for us, it was about having a different experience at each cafe. Even from coffees, having different coffees at each cafe. So he loved that, and that's kind of what we started implementing. So just with your surroundings, your customer base, you just kind of set up a different look and feel in the cafe, but straight to the bank, having good training and having options on coffee. So we initially did a blend that we try to keep as consistent as possible year after year. And then just changing up the South and Central American single origins and African single origins. And then at some of the cafes, we had like a slow brew section that also did well. But it was hard work. So 3 years into that, they actually handed over the management of the cafes to us. And that's when Andrew moved up to Joburg to just oversee that. So we had to oversee and manage 90 staff members, which was extremely challenging. And it kind of sucked us in resource-wise. So I think in general, it was good. I think it was probably a bit early for us in our life cycle to enter that type of venture with them, because we actually never had a proper chance to build our brand. Instead, we were building someone else's brand. And it was great.
Well, I was going to say that a lot of people listening probably didn't realize that they were drinking Legato coffee when they were having coffees at Exclusive Books.
Yes, well, and they didn't allow us to do any branding. I think on the menu, if you had your any form of microscope with you, you would probably be able to see the... it stayed somewhere there on the menu that it was roasted by Legato Coffee, but at no point were we allowed to put on any branding whatsoever. So, but it was a good stint. We learned a hell of a lot regarding retail. We learned a lot about setting up shop and spaces, what works, what doesn't work. We learned a lot about managing staff, and it was fortunate enough it was on someone else's checkbook at that point. But you know, looking back, you kind of count the cost, and you were like, you know, at some areas, was it really worth it all? But again, a good experience. I think we probably write it off as school fees. But yeah, it was good.
And what does Legato look like today? You guys recently opened a new cafe, right?
Yeah. So I think we had a, so it was probably end of 2018 when Exclusive Books confirmed that they will terminate the contract. And at that stage, end of 2018 was quite a tough year for us, purely because we were also busy since 2015. We were busy with trying to kickstart a venture in the US and putting a lot of time and cash flow into that. And literally almost the same time that we got news from of Exclusive Books, we also got news from the US we were about to launch, and got news that we've got to put things on hold as the margins had a drastic change due to a few circumstances. Again, it was good experience, and it's hopefully something that we can kickstart again at some point. I'm lucky. Well, I'm actually at this stage, I'm glad we didn't, because I think this COVID-19 situation would have been a bit dismal for any business. But there's still potential. So we did a lot of research, market research, brand research. We've got a full-on business plan that we pulled up for that market. And the US market is an established market. So if you do come in, you need to know what you're doing, first of all, and second of all, you need to have your ducks in a row, because the first time you can't supply, you won't stock again, number one. And second of all, the consumption, I've never in my life seen consumption like that, ever, anywhere. We had orders for trial or orders placed for trial orders, and it's almost some roasters' months worth of roasting, you know. So you've got to have your ducks in a row. And I think it was probably at that point a good thing that we didn't kickstart it. I think we still need to get a few things geared up. So yeah, so there's still an open channel to hopefully pursue that in the near future. But coming back to our shop in Stellenbosch, so we decided with all the ventures and prospects that we were involved in, that it was a good idea for us to actually just start building our own brand, something that we've neglected to do to our detriment, and probably just start building a brand that reflects who we are. And we decided, listen, let's do a flagship store that encapsulates who we are. So I loved doing that. I enjoyed doing that. I think we learned a lot from Exclusive Books. There's a bit of a golden thread that we could pull through in just the quality and the aesthetically, the quality of the shop, but also matching that with service and product, which is important for us. And Stellenbosch is not an easy climate. There's a lot of competition. It's a small town, so you've got to put your stamp down. It's actually been a good 6 months before COVID. COVID temporarily closed the shop. So it's been good. It's been a learning experience as well. But we're enjoying it. So, and then we've got a couple of other outlets as well, a little bit more of a satellite coffee carts and coffee outlets. And then we've got the roastery on the farm as well, which is still going.
But I suppose your primary business is still wholesale at this point, right? I mean, you're serving cafe clients all around the Western Cape, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's correct. So, I would love to say it's a majority is wholesale, but I think most of the guys that you chatted to would probably say that their cafes are an extremely intricate part of their cash flow and finances. You know, wholesale, I remember having this chat with one of the green bean brokers when we started in 2010. And they said to me at that stage, including all the mass roasters in South Africa, there were about 35 roasters on their books. Now, I can guarantee you now that if you ask them the same question prior to COVID-19, they would probably say they've got over 1,000 on their books. Yeah. So you can just imagine the playing field. And my opinion is that the consumer, you know, yes, the consumer is more knowledgeable and the consumer has grown, but not to the extent that the competition has grown. You know, we technically are still tapping into a taxpayer. Your average Joe using public transport cannot afford, or if they can afford, they've got to weigh up whether they want to spend this money on this 25 or 35 rand on a cup of coffee, you know, versus feeding their family. So you're technically tapping into a taxpayer market, which, you know, I think in the last year has probably diminished a little bit with a lot of people immigrating. But yeah, so that's the reality of it. So, you know, you're chasing wholesale volume, but, you know, with all the competition getting into the market, and I think there's probably quite a few that will fall out after this. But it's challenging to grow your numbers. It's challenging to grow your volumes if you are dedicated to certain protocols and not willing to budge on that. So, and I'm talking on the quality of product that you push out. So. Yeah. So hence why we're also looking for foreign business in established but also in emerging markets. So there are a few leads that we are busy following up. But, you know, whether it's exporting or whether it's consulting, whatever it is, it's necessary. You know, South Africa is, we love South Africa. This is where our heart is. And we love what's happening in the coffee industry here. But unfortunately, you know, it's not always enough to grow. And obviously for us, you know, China, if your aim is to own as much of the chain as possible, then, you know, the biggest struggle is, you know, how you cannot buy directly from a farmer if you're not doing the volume. And yeah. Jonathan will probably be able to tell you that. You know, so South Africa is, there's limited volume. If you're not a retail grocer, there's limited volume that you can do. And, you know, for us to buy directly from a farm, or from a farmer is hard, because I think Joel actually mentioned it. You know, if you get there and the guy, you're asking the guy if you can buy a couple of bags, you know, that's not what he wants to hear. He wants to hear that you're buying his whole crop. That's kind of the catch. So yeah. So that's kind of for us. But I think there's a lot of potential still within this industry, in different avenues.
Despite that buying scale challenge, which, as you say, I think that all South African specialty coffee roasters face that challenge, I do think that you guys also do quite an exceptional job of getting a pretty broad variety of really, really great coffees. You know, I know that you have a small but dedicated following within the Cape Coffee Beans customer base. So let's talk a little bit about that. How, you know, despite the fact that you can't go buy a farmer's whole crop, you are managing to get some exceptional coffees. What is your approach to sourcing?
Okay, so for us, it's there's quite a few guys that we partner with regarding coffee, and some of them are abroad, some of them are local. But for us, the biggest thing is number one is traceability of the coffee. And then that's something that's even more equal of importance is taste. So if a coffee doesn't taste well, even if it's got the credentials, for me, and the size of our business, it doesn't warrant the why I should get it. You know, if I'm not going to enjoy it, and if my customer base is not going to enjoy it, whether it's got a story or a mean for now, you know, it's a different thing if I was committed to this farmer, and that's what I've got to do to support them. But I'm not doing those type of volumes. So my credential at the moment is it's got to be traceable, but it's also got to be great tasting coffee. And, you know, taste, again, depends on who's behind the cup. You know, for me, I guess every roaster kind of, you've got to have guys around you that helps you with this process, and that's in the process to kind of have a difference of opinion. You know, in Afrikaans, they call it, you don't want a ja broer, which means you don't want a yes brother. You want someone that's challenging and that can kind of have an input on that type of different coffees as well. So that's important for us. But also the feedback of the customer, you know, and you kind of, after 10 years, you get an idea of what coffees actually work and what coffees doesn't work, you know. So, you know, there might have been some coffees that we've had before that we thought it was an exceptional coffee, and it just the consumer just didn't really like. And it could probably just be down to brewing method, you know, or the way that they brew. So, but the fact of the matter is, it doesn't help I buy and commit to buying coffees and it doesn't sell. So I've got to have a flow through of that. So yeah, so we've got a few guys that we work with, and we're actually waiting for some new Ethiopian and Kenyan coffees to arrive, which I'm very excited about. Some great ones, and that should probably be with us in the next 4 to 8 weeks, depending how quickly stuff can be released. Peyton, it's a difficult question, because you also, well, it's not that difficult, but you know, you also want to listen to what your consumer and your, you know, you've got a following, and you cannot be all things to all men. So, you know, for us, it's important to stick to what we believe in. And that's something that we kind of follow through with our sourcing, and with our roasting and with our quality control. And, you know, I'll give you an example. So we supply in the Winelands area, we're supplying quite a few fine dining restaurants. So, you know, and the chefs, you go there and you do an effort, and they visit your roastery and you go through the coffees and they love the coffees that you love. And then they start buying the coffees, and within a month, they call you up and they tell you, listen, if they have one more international tourist complaining about acidity in coffee, then he's going to throw them with something. So, you know, you've also got to listen to that. You know, I can't be, you know, stubborn about it and say, well, this is all I have. So, you know, we try and work with them, trying to give them coffees and trying to figure out what it is. So, and the same with the retail space. And that's something that we learned from Exclusive Books, is getting that feedback from consumers, you know. And you could see it in sales. The blend was always the go-to coffee. There's people that love drinking the same coffee day in, day out. They don't want to change it up. And then there's people that loves change. And you can see it in our sales. So there's certain coffees that are that we try and keep very similar, you know, although it's seasonal, you know, you try and keep flavor profiles quite similar. And people love it. Year in, year out, that's all that they'll buy. And then you have the guys that love exploring and can't wait for new stuff. And I must say, through your website, we're finding a lot more of that. That's kind of where I see a difference between my online sales and your online sales, because I can see on your online sales that the guys are, they love experimenting. They love trying the different way out coffees, that, you know, to the normal regular consumer out there doesn't necessarily taste like coffee, you know? But on my site, you know, it's very rare. It's not very rare, but it's the percentage of guys buying the exceptional single origins with way out flavor profiles are in the minority.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the interesting things about the market that we've tapped into at Cape Coffee Beans is we have this unusual consumer who wants lots of variety and really wacky flavor profiles and a lot of different things to experience. And I mean, to give you guys credit, you know, you said that you can't be all things to all people, and I definitely wouldn't accuse you of doing that. But the one thing that I have to credit you for is that it does feel that within your portfolio of coffees, you do kind of always have something that'll please very different palates. Like, you've got those incredible, wacky, natural profile, fermenty coffees that the real coffee nerd's going to love. But you always have a couple of coffees where, even if I'm suggesting it to somebody who's not so adventurous, they're going to enjoy it, you know? Even if maybe they're used to something a little bit darker roasted, they're still going to be able to appreciate what you guys roast. And so I think that you clearly have put a lot of thought and effort into having a portfolio of coffees that covers a reasonably broad spectrum of tastes in coffee.
Yes, I agree with that. So I think it's just past experience, I guess, and trying to be a bit more flexible. But as I mentioned, flexible within what we believe in and what we stand for. So, which is important for us. But I think our journey with that, you know, sometimes we have a little bit of a range that would suit the extravagant, exceptional side, and sometimes it's just a struggle with getting hold of good coffees. And for me, I won't, you know, if there's people looking for a good Kenyan, if I can't find a good Kenyan, then I'm not going to supply a good Kenyan. So I'm not just going to have a Kenyan for the sake of having a Kenyan coffee. So I think sometimes we have 15 coffees and sometimes we have 5 coffees. You know, it depends on what we can get our whole hands on at that point. But I agree, it's probably through experience, probably through complaints that we've in the past that we've had to adapt ourselves to kind of service a broader palate. And if I talk about complaints, it's probably more on a wholesale level than a home consumer. So
I think you also do a great job of catering to that breadth of tastes in terms of how you roast the coffees as well. Now, this is like, I'm obviously not a roaster myself, and so I'm speaking purely from a consumer perspective. But my impression, one of my impressions of Legato Coffees, is that you guys seem quite comfortable roasting in different ways for different coffees. And obviously every roaster does that, right? Every roaster profiles their coffees. But you might not know this, but on the shelf at the Cape Coffee Beans store, we kind of have all the coffees laid out by roaster, from kind of the lightest roasted coffees to the darkest roasted coffees. And the Legato coffees kind of sit reasonably near the middle of the shelf. But in a way, I always think to myself, you know, I don't know if that makes sense, because that Danilo Salazar could be all the way to the left, and that Ellerin Kun could probably be a little bit more to the right, and all really exceptionally executed. But I do feel like, you know, where some roasters really have their kind of signature degree of roast, and they play within a kind of finer range, you guys seem to branch out a little bit more to cater to the different palates. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes, definitely. So, you know, I don't buy coffees according to my roasting degree. I buy coffees according to what degree it tastes good at. You know, I very rarely, in fact, I don't think I've ever ventured into the dark side of roasting. And I haven't had customers ask me for a roast that is extremely dark. So we kind of, our ethos is just get a coffee, sample roast it, taste it in different roasting degree levels, and which one do we like? Which one would suit the customer base out there the best, you know? If it's too light, if it's too acidic, can we maybe tone it down? What can we change in the roasting profile to make it more accommodating? And then maybe try it in different roasting methods, see what works best. But ultimately, it's about taste. You know, you can have all the gadgets, you can have all the profile, you can have all the adjustments, but if it doesn't taste nice, it doesn't help. You know, it's like espresso machines. You can have the most amazing feedback on an espresso machine or on equipment, but if what's in the cup is not pleasant, it doesn't make sense. So for us, our default setting is always, you know, you've got protocols that you follow, you can make adjustments, but inevitably it's about taste. And we've, you know, I'll be the first to put up my hand, we've sometimes had it wrong. So where you've got to go back and to the drawing board and redo it. And sometimes there's coffees that you roast and you're like, I'm not 100% sure. And I'll be honest with you, the Danilo Salazar, I thought to myself, we roasted the first time, I cupped it over two, almost 3 weeks, tasted in different, and I wasn't, there was something that I couldn't get rid of in that coffee that I wasn't 100% happy with. And I just thought to myself, okay, let's maybe just put it out there. Maybe it's just me. And I taste that coffee now and it's not there. So I haven't changed anything in my last roasting profiles. It's just, I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know what it is. It's just, it's not there. So I think also the biggest, I wouldn't say downfall to roasters, is that you are your own worst critic, you know? So you always criticize your work. You always criticize the coffee. You never 100% sure. And I think it's a fine balance between, it's a good thing where you can push yourself to go even better. But there's also a point where you overanalyzing things and possibly making adjustments to something that's already good, already great. So for me, it's just, I sometimes just have to step away from it and then revisit it a little bit later just to see whether it's still there, whether I'm happy. And it's funny enough, with different coffees, and we all know the importance of water quality with coffees. So, you know, you at the roastery, you know, a coffee could possibly taste a certain way. But if I take it home, it could taste different. So I also try and, with all our coffees, I try and at least drink it in different areas, even at our shop in Stellenbosch versus our roastery versus my house and where I stay in Somerset West, you know, just try it out because it's possibly tasting very different. But anyway,
No, I mean, I think that's no, it's such a valid point. And I think that, you know, some of the people listening to this podcast will be interested to hear that. One of the things that we've done at Cape Coffee Beans headquarters is we do our weekly cupping with whatever samples we have from our roasters. And on occasion, we've done a water comparison. Well, we'll cup the same three coffees with water from the tap, which has a BWT filter on it, and with the water from the H2O bottle delivered water. And the difference is stark. And we've even had things like changing the bypass setting on that BWT filter, and it drastically changes the flavor of the coffee again. So that water component is definitely huge, and one that obviously is coming into focus. And maybe we can do a subsequent episode all about the water impacts. But I will also say, by the way, that the Danilo Salazar, I personally love, and I will say that I do think that most of the team at Cape Coffee Beans really loves that coffee as well. So I would encourage everybody to taste it.
It's an amazing coffee. I know Origins also had it at a certain stage, but it's an exceptional coffee. I must say, I was very surprised. I love that when you open a bag, it's the aroma of strawberries it just hits me with that. So I'm overtaken by that. But it's a good tasting coffee.
I will actually tell you, it's funny. I would never normally mention a negative review that because we do get reviews on the coffee on the site, and I will say that overall the Legado coffees are very positively reviewed. We did get one recently on the Danilo Salazar where it said the aroma and flavor of strawberries was overwhelming, which I think that for those who are really into specialty coffee, that's actually a compliment. But this customer didn't intend it as such.
It does state on the bag, so I can't, you know, it's just a mid-red error. So no, but it is. I mean, it's there's some exceptional coffee. So and that one I'm definitely enjoying.
Absolutely, not for your traditional Italian
and you espresso must, drinker. You must definitely. I think no, definitely not. You must definitely, if you, it's a side note probably, I think all the roasters would appreciate feedback on comments or any feedback that you receive on coffees.
Of course.
I mean, it's a way for us to also improve our coffees.
I think like one of the roles that we really have to play as well is connecting the right people with the right coffees, you know.
Yes, because, that's it.
Because, you know, the person who enjoys the Danilo Salazar probably won't enjoy our darker espresso blends and vice versa. And that's, you know, that's part of the role we have to play. So, Richard, just in kind of approaching the last couple of things here, briefly just tell us what does Legado look like in terms of the team today? So it's you and Andrew's obviously still involved, but also working on the green side of the market. What does your team look like?
So we've got about 12 guys in our team currently, of which operationally at the roastery we are about six, and I've got a pretty strong operational team, which is great because it's the backbone of the business. There are a lot of areas that I'm also involved in, but I like shedding some of the responsibilities, and not because I'm trying to shy away from responsibilities, but just because I absolutely hate micromanaging. It's something that drains the life out of me. So when I appoint people, it's usually people that are forward thinking and proactive. So, and that can contribute. So I tend to try and, especially these days, I tend to try and leave a lot of the decision making with them, to sort out things, and just try and oversee some of the parts in the operational side of business. So I've got guys here. And most of the guys that are at the roastery has been with us for at least 5-6 years. Gamu, that's actually So we've got two guys that I can line up for roasting, and that's excluding myself. But they've been with me. The one has been with us for almost a full 10 years. And, well, he started when we started roasting for Warren. So it's 9 years. And then the other one, Papaya, is in for 6 years. So it's been great. And what I've been enjoying, especially with these guys, is just how they've grown within their skill set of distinguishing coffees. So especially when it comes to cupping, and just how their palates developed, which is amazing. And it's people that I can trust with my life. So I'm thankful for that. And then I've got the rest of the staff is baristas, and then I've got a store manager at our shop, our flagship store, and then just baristas. So our flagship store, I don't have a cafe set up. I don't have a kitchen, so it's literally focusing predominantly on coffee equipment. There's a few machines on display there. And then we've got some other brands, like leather brands and goods that you can buy. And then usually food items I get in pre-made. So I don't have a lot of space. I want quite a lean team. I just saw with Exclusive Books. In fact, we at a later stage, Exclusive Books, we started closing down kitchens just because it was. It was quite strenuous financially, and it's almost as if food overtakes the focus of coffee a lot of the time. And I know, you know, you're probably shooting yourself in the foot by not doing food items on at the facility, but you can probably get more feet in. But it just So having had that experience with Exclusive Books, it's something that we try and avoid and steer away as long as possible. Maybe at some point we'll go that route. But for now, we're trying to keep the team quite lean and have the focus more on coffee. So I've got a team there of two full-time baristas, store manager, kind of a runner. And then I have a guy who's part of the operational team that is my all-rounder. So and he helped us with the training at Exclusive Books. So he's an exceptional barista. So he can stand in at any of the stores if necessary. In fact, all my staff, except my operational admin lady, Vanessa, except for her, everyone else can make a very, very good cup of coffee. So and brew some good coffees. And then I've got two other outlets that I've got guys at. And then when we're looking, well, depending on how long COVID will carry on and what the financial state would be after that. But we're probably looking at some sites in Somerset West as well. So
okay, yeah. Cool. Well, so, one last question for you, Rehard, before we wrap up here. The all-important one that I think people are always curious to hear. I had been asking people what coffees they're brewing at home and how they're making them, but I realized that wasn't a specific enough question. So I'm going to ask you today, what did you brew for yourself at home and how did you make it?
So today, I've got a little espresso machine set up at home. And funny enough, I kind of turn it around. So I've got espresso set up at home. And then at the roastery, I normally do alternative brewing methods. So depending on the day, Chemex or... but I like to start off my day with an espresso-based drink. And then late in the day, I normally do the more fruitier coffees and alternative lighter roasted coffees. But today, I actually drank our Bolivia. La Rosario. I've got that in the hopper at home. I'm enjoying it because it's almost coming to an end. So I'm savoring. I'll let you know when it does. But
oh damn, how?
But we've probably got about a month months stock left of it, green stock. So so I'm savoring that. But that's what I drank this morning, yeah. Espresso. And I, the problem is I've made my wife quite accustomed to that in the morning. So I at a stage I thought about bringing the espresso machine back to the roastery, and she just profusely declined that I do that. So
fair enough.
So that's pretty much it.
Okay, gotcha. Well, Rehard, that was a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time. It was definitely interesting to hear a little bit more about the story. You guys have a particularly intriguing story of the start with the coffee angel and the book and everything else. It might need to be made into a movie at some point. But thank you very much for sharing the story.
Thanks, man, and thanks for your support over the years, and for the effort that you've been doing in the coffee industry. So I can just echo what the previous guys have said, and I think your platform is a great platform for not just education, but just a place where people can find array of different coffees and different roasters, so with quality product, so and good support.
Well, that's
so thanks
kind.
For that.
Thank you. I'm definitely a Legato fan, and the best part of my job is being able to work with all these coffee suppliers that make my favorite coffees. So it's a privilege to do it.
Great, man.
Thanks.
Thanks, Faden. Appreciate it.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode with Legato and Rehard from Legato Coffee Roasters. I really think that their story is as good as their coffee. So I would encourage you, now that you know their story, if you haven't yet, you definitely must check out their coffee. Legato is one of the brands that we've worked with for some time, and I have to admit, I personally choose to drink their coffee very often, as do many of my colleagues. So if you'd like to support Legato Coffee Roasters, you can find their coffee on the Cape Coffee Beans website, as well as all the other roasters that you may have heard on this podcast. I will make sure to include that link in the show notes. If you are enjoying the podcast, please do leave a review on whatever podcast listening platform that you use, and I'll see you at the next episode.